Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. House Republicans have moved a step closer to permitting fracking on state-owned land, including state parks. Last week, the House voted to override several line-item vetoes of the state budget by Governor Kasich. One override restored a provision that shifts power to appoint the Oil and Gas Commission. The commission was created 6 years ago when the Ohio General Assembly also approved drilling on state lands, but the governor has never appointed any members, which has amounted to a de facto moratorium on fracking in state parks. The Senate still has to approve the veto override. Coming up, we'll hear from proponents and opponents to fracking on state land. Joining us is Columbus Dispatch Energy reporter Dan Guarino. Welcome back.
Glad to be here, Ann.
Also by phone, Representative Andy Thompson. He's a Republican from the 95th Ohio District, which includes Carroll, Harrison, and Noble counties, and portions of Washington and Belmont counties. He wrote the language that the governor vetoed. Representative Thompson serves on the Ohio House Natural Resources Committee. Welcome to the show.
Great to be on, Ann.
You know, Representative Thompson, before we get started on this topic, I just want to touch upon a post by a retired state naturalist with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. He wrote on his Facebook page yesterday that the Ohio Division of Wildlife chief was fired last week, that both assistant chiefs were fired. He speculated that at least four other top administrators or more were likely to follow. He called it a hostile political takeover by the political appointees who currently run the ODNR. And he said that this is by far the worst political gamesmanship that he has seen in 30 plus years of involvement with state government. Are you aware of the turmoil in the Ohio Department of Natural Resources?
I actually read that post from Jim McCormick, who I consider a friend. He's worked with us at my family business, Birdwatchers Digest. So, I'm sorry to hear about that. I'm sorry to learn about it. I think we need to learn more about what transpired, who was impacted, and how that would impact operations for the state and the citizens of Ohio.
So you're related to Bill Thompson then?
It's my brother.
Okay. Nice to know the connection. All right. Back to oil and gas. Representative Thompson, what do you know about why the governor has not appointed the commission?
Well, I can only, suggest that there was probably something related to the debate about the severance tax. I know, it's been one of the key objectives of his is to raise the severance tax as part of a tax reform or cutting the income tax. One of the things that I've always tried to defend is the idea that the severance tax was devoted to two purposes. In particular, one was to provide sufficient regulatory oversight as this new drilling expanded in the Utica and Marcellus Shale, and secondly, to provide the resources to deal with orphan wells, which are historic wells that were drilled from the time of Rockefeller on, many of which exist now that have not been remedied. We have problems and threats to the groundwater. So those were the two purposes for the severance tax. So I think because of the severance tax debate in which he was not prevailing, he held up accessing of the minerals for Ohio's taxpayers.
Is that what your understanding is, Dan Guarino, as far as is this a retribution kind of a thing or this is a political thing?
Well, the idea that this is somehow a response to the severance tax issue is something that is, I guess it's kind of a widely held idea. It's not something I've ever heard anyone from the governor's office say, nor would I necessarily expect them to say.
Right.
But yeah, it's definitely something that has been said.
So, Representative Thompson, did you talk to the administration before inserting this provision in the state budget?
Well, I'll say this much. I'm the Finance Subcommittee Chair on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Development. So as part of our hearings, we've had this discussion about the fact that 6 years down the road from House Bill 133, no action has been taken to appoint the State Lands Drilling Commission. And in that context, the taxpayers of Ohio have been denied access to their minerals. At the same time, adjacent royalty owners who have properties who can't form a unit because of state lands have been denied the access to their minerals as well. So much like the recent change in law that permitted folks in the Wayne National Forest and other national forests to access their minerals under the Obama administration, we would hope to see the same thing take place in the state of Ohio. And again, I believe that the state can transact this in a way that is sensitive to the environmental concerns that have been expressed out there. Certainly, we would have the continued oversight of ODNR and others. But what we would do is put that commission in place so that we can resolve some of the concerns or outstanding issues that might be delaying the access of these minerals. And, for example, in the case of a state park like Salt Fork, which is reclaimed strip mine area, mm-hmm. We go about that process of figuring out, are there any federal grants that went into the purchase of this property that would kind of complicate the ability to drill? And finally, we don't have to drill on the surface of any of these state properties. We can access them from offsite. That's what horizontal drilling has made possible. And that surface disruption that people are concerned about has been significantly reduced because of the technology that's available.
Dan Guarino, what did the governor say about why he vetoed this provision, this line item in the budget?
He issues a veto message about every line item veto,
right.
And with this one, he's talking specifically about how this would create these conflicts within the different kind of authorities. That for state lands, there are a variety of executive branch agencies that would have oversight, and then for this narrow area, you would have this legislative appointed commission, and that would create some potential for problems.
Meaning they'd be at cross purposes sometimes. The left hand wouldn't know what the right hand was doing, that kind of a thing.
Exactly, yeah.
What about that, Representative Thompson? Are you concerned that there can be some, just glitches down the road?
Well, I think that's what the purpose of the commission would be, because there will be disputes. There'll be probably some concerns expressed by other agencies, and that would be the purpose of the commission to hear testimony. I mean, this will happen in the light of day. I mean, it's still governed by sunshine laws and everything else. So the public would be able to sit in, have input to the operations of the commission. But absent a commission, you can't proceed on these topics at all. And to think about what, might have been realized by taxpayers of Ohio related to this. Just as an example, the Muskingum Watershed Conservancy District, which impacts my area, has realized more than $200 million in bonus payments and royalties from oil and gas operations on their lands. Now, as far as I know, there hasn't been any environmental outcry about the Muskingum Watershed Conservancy District and accessing its minerals, which, frankly, were the taxpayers of Ohio originally. So this property, again, it can be done in a way that is sensitive to the values of those with environmental concerns, with those who are interested in the oil and gas rights. And the revenue from that could be used, number one, to reduce our budgetary concerns here in the state of Ohio, but also for things like economic development. So, many areas like Carroll County, which is in my district, can't have economic development because they haven't got this water and sewer infrastructure that would be good for the environment, frankly, and would also facilitate economic development going forward. So there are a lot of different concerns that aren't being addressed because we haven't appointed the commission. And so, I think proceeding, we can do it in a way that is sensitive to environmental concerns.
So, for instance, the Muskingum Watershed Conservancy District happens to be owned by that local entity versus state lands, and that's the difference.
Yeah, that's the difference. But again, they have environmental concerns that they need to address as well. They're really in charge of the watershed and the drainage and how water passes through and the dams and streams and everything. So they have significant environmental amenities that they need to protect as well. And I think they've done a capable job. But at the same time, they've been able to realize revenue that makes possible, future infrastructure improvements that will improve flood control and will, frankly, I hope, enhance the recreational opportunities in the area as well.
Dan Guarino, do we know at all whether or how much or what this delay, this 6-year delay, has cost landowners and or the state?
No, there's
in foregone revenue, I guess.
The two numbers that I would really like to know and are just they don't exist are precisely how much state land are we talking about and how much potential revenue, even an estimate. When I ask those questions, what I've been told is that these are the kinds of questions that a commission would seek to get answers to, and that any any attempt at answers at this point would be just a shot in the dark kind of speculation.
Representative Thompson, do you have any sense about what we're talking about here in terms of foregone revenue?
Yeah, one of the things that I'd point out to Dan and your listeners is, take Salt Fork as an example. It's 20,000 acres. It doesn't seem like it has fantastic oil and gas opportunities at this point. We know this, having gone down the road based on other wells that have been drilled. But if we had leased it, say, 6 years ago, we might have done way better in terms of, you know, the price that could have been secured for that, because it was speculative at that point. And, you know, right now, prices are way, way down, so leases aren't realizing as much. If we had leased it again 5-6 years ago, you might have gotten $5,000 to $10,000 an acre. Some areas of the watershed, they have gotten as much as $15,000 or even more per acre. That gives you an idea. If you can just do the math on a cocktail napkin, you can try to project what Egypt Valley, which is in my district, Bar Camp State Park, Wolf Run, which is in Noble County. There are public lands everywhere. But in addition to that, those private royalty owners, they would also be paying significant taxes. So we have ad valorem tax. We have, you know, the other taxes that the drillers would pay in terms of sales tax. A lot of local revenue is being lost, a lot of state revenue is being lost, and a lot of potential economic development that could come from that revenue is also being lost. So that's the kind of thing that we ask, as Dan said, that the commission would help us assess and resolve and ultimately carry out.
What do we know about the economic impact of fracking in Ohio at this point, Dan Guarino?
The economic impact in particular in the parts of the state where the activity is has been the most pronounced is substantial. I remember about a year and a half ago going to Cambridge, Ohio, when this was an industry supposedly that was in the midst of a downturn, and still the oil and gas activity was visible everywhere. Even in a really bad month, you can see it on the street. If you're just driving through one of these communities, you see it in the form of landowners who are getting royalty payments that they've used to buy new farm equipment, new vehicles, new houses. Even you see it. So there is a tremendous amount of wealth that's been pumped into those communities, and through the existing severance tax that's gone to the state. Now, as far as kind of quantifying the total amount, there are a number of different reports out there, and it all comes down to direct versus indirect money, you know, which is often the case with something like this. But bottom line is, it's a lot. It's money that we weren't expecting 10 years ago. So it's basically, think of this as, you know, $100 bills raining from the sky in a lot of ways in a part of the state that has been economically disadvantaged in the last couple decades.
You know, going back to something you said, Representative Thompson, about the per acre leasing rights, what they would be getting 6 years ago versus now. I would think that the demand would be higher now than it would have been 6 years ago, that the value would increase over time.
Well, one of the things that probably Dan would concur with this is, we're a victim of our own success. We have produced so much natural gas from the Utica and Marcellus shale, it's driven prices down.
Gotcha.
So, you know, there's just been such an abundance of leasing that's been done, very speculative, and frankly, some of the big producers haven't yet made a lot of money on this, frankly. When you put $8 to $12 million into a well, then you hope to recapture that revenue over time. And as prices plummeted, it made it harder to make a return on that $8 to $12 million investment. So what we need to realize as a state, I think the governor often would say, well, they're not going anywhere. They've got this opportunity here, and so they have to be here. Well, Ohio isn't the only shale play in the nation. There are shale plays in Texas. There are shale plays in North Dakota. Some of these are more oil-related, where the price of the resource is much higher than natural gas itself. And so we've got other opportunities, and That's the job of petroleum engineers. They get up every day and they look at the economics and they decide where the best place to do business is. In terms of revenue that has come into the state, it has surpassed $30 billion. Maybe it's as much as $50 billion. And that is in direct investment in terms of materials, drilling, that what we would call the upstream and then the midstream is the processing of the resource. And then the downstream are the businesses that evolve to access that inexpensive energy. In the case of if we get a cracker plant over in eastern Ohio, that will generate the ethylene and polyethylene for plastics, for agribusiness, for manufacturing generally. And that's where we hope to see that manufacturing come back in Ohio and in our sector generally. So one of the things I like to say is probably Donald Trump won his election because of the energy-producing states of Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. And that's something, again, that is significant as we go forward in terms of the political stuff, but also certainly on the economic front.
What are your expectations about how this will fare in the Senate?
Based on my, discussions with the Senate and Senate President, I think it's very favorable toward this provision. I think the Senate understands that this is a significant economic opportunity for the state of Ohio. And one other thing that I would say, for Dan and your listeners is, this is a tax cut for the consumers of Ohio. We don't have to execute an additional tax cut. This reduces the amount of demands made on the state of Ohio by those folks who formerly didn't have jobs in Southeast Ohio. Now we have a lot of jobs that are available for people who have the skills to access them. So ultimately, when a poor part of the state experiences prosperity, that alleviates the pressure on the rest of the state. And again, we hope that this State Lands Drilling Commission will get up and running so that we can assess the possibilities and carry forward the production.
Representative Andy Thompson, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Ann.
Representative Andy Thompson, a Republican from the 95th Ohio District. He serves on the House Natural Resources Committee, and he's the man behind the language that the governor vetoed, one of 47 vetoes. It's also at the heart of one of 11 veto overrides in the Ohio House. It still awaits Senate approval. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The House Republicans moved a step closer to permitting fracking on state-owned land, including state parks. Last week, the House voted to override several line item vetoes of the state budget by Governor Kasich. One override restored a provision that would shift power to appoint the Ohio Oil and Gas Commission. The commission was created 6 years ago when the Ohio General Assembly also approved drilling on state lands, but the governor has never appointed any members, which has amounted to a de facto moratorium on fracking on state property, including state parks. The Senate still has to approve that veto override. We just heard from Representative Andy Thompson. He's the Republican from the 95th Ohio District who serves on the House Natural Resources Committee and the Finance Subcommittee, and he's behind the insertion of that provision in the state budget. Joining us by phone is founder of the Landowners for Energy Access and Safe Exploration, Becky Clutter. Becky is also a board member of the National Association of Royalty Owners Appalachia Chapter, which represents citizens who own natural resources. Welcome to the show, Becky.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
And also joining us is the Executive Vice President for the Ohio Oil and Gas Association, Sean Bennett. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Becky, you said that landowners with mineral rights that abut state lands are currently trapped because of the state's inaction. Why can't they just have the drilling occur on their property and be done with it? What's the connection there?
The issue is really that the operators create drilling units, and with technology, they are able to go out long distances and create drilling units. Sean could probably tell you a little bit better how that piece of it works. But when they get to an area that's trapped, like around a state property, the private properties are basically held hostage when the state lands aren't open for leasing availability.
Why is that, though? I mean, if you're just how do they determine where the oil and gas is coming from?
I guess I don't really understand the question. That the private parcels could hold the drill rigs, and you can go underneath the state land, so there would be no surface disruption at all.
Okay,
it's just that when you get a parcel that's immediately adjacent to a state-held property, the way that they've got the units configured, it literally traps the private landowner.
Sean Bennett, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, no, thank you. Here, give me a scenario. When I have to drill a unit, and again, it's about having the amount of acreage. So when I'm drilling a unit, I have to say, let's say I have 1,280 acres in that unit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to drill 6 laterals, 5,000-10,000 feet out. I need to make sure that everybody there is under lease, and so they are going to, again, be able to accept royalty payments. Now, the problem with some of the state lands, and I'll take I-70 as a great example here. You could have private landowners on the southern part of I-70, and you could have landowners who are leased on the northern part of I-70. And unfortunately, the state owns the little strip of I-70. Now, since the state is not able to lease lands because they don't have the leasing commission, those property owners on the southern part of I-70 and the northern part of I-70 will never have their minerals developed because of that one holdout right in the middle, and that's the state of Ohio. So, you know, that's just a very simple example. But again, it's about the rule of capture. And when I drill that well and I complete that well, those molecules are going to flow no matter what. So anybody who's part of that unit is going to have their oil and gas minerals flow to the borehole then produced. So you want to make sure that everybody there is under leased or under an agreement that they're there to have their minerals developed. And without that agreement, without those, without that plan moving forward, those people on the southern part of I-70, those people in the northern part can never have their minerals developed.
Do we know how much state land is up in the air over this?
You know, that's a very great question. And, you know, that was really one of the points of going
still,
through this process.
Until the commission is formed, that
you know,
we don't know? Or
yes, exactly. The state of Ohio knows, or I guess they don't really necessarily know. They'd have to go back through. Each state agency has different plots of land and minerals that they have acquired over time. You know, a lot of people just think state parks.
Right.
They think ODNR.
There's a lot of focus on state parks.
But there's also Department of Administrative Services. There are prisons throughout eastern Ohio, colleges, universities, as well as, you know, easements that the state owns for either roads like I-70 or easements that they've never actually developed themselves. So it's kind of piecemeal throughout the state. But the large contiguous acreages are largely state lands.
Dangarino, have you looked at what other states have done in these cases?
You know, I haven't.
Anne. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, that would be a good thing to look at, yeah.
Well, no, but how many others – I mean, what happens in another state? Well, how do other states handle it, Sean Bennett?
Most of other oil and gas producing states do allow the development of state acreage.
Do they have a commission like we're talking about now?
It's usually a simpler process.
I mean, once there's a commission, Becky Clutter, I mean, there may still be – I mean, the commission has to vote on these leases. There may be it's not a guarantee that every potential lease operation would be granted by the state.
That's correct, but this would be part of starting the process. For example, I don't even know that the state of Ohio truly understands or knows who owns the minerals underneath those properties. So, you know, some of them may be privately held. You know, they won't know until the commission can actually get seated and look at those issues.
You compared the issue of fracking on state land or in this way that Sean Bennett described with your experience owning land adjacent to federal land. How are they alike bureaucratically?
The commission, I believe, would serve a very similar function to that of the Bureau of Land Management. And right now we don't have that ability to perform that function, and that this commission would do that.
Sean Bennett, Dangarino, read or explained the governor's description of why he opposed the change, that it would conflict, that you'd have one kind of an agency overseeing, you'd have a legislature, the Ohio General Assembly overseeing something that otherwise would be overseen by the administration, and there could be conflicts of interest.
Mm-hmm. I don't believe there'd be conflicts of interest, but I believe the Ohio House and the General Assembly itself were frustrated by inaction. I mean, you can't just purposely violate the law. That's what's going on now. You know, that commission was supposed to be set 45 days after the law was signed. And it has not been. And then 6 years later, I think out of growing frustrations, the House and the Senate decide to act. And again, it's about putting together the process. And Becky discussed this earlier, and we're kind of alluding to it, is, you know, this isn't a carte blanche, you know, leasing of state lands. This is about developing a process to understand better, you know, A, how much land do we have here in the state that the state owns? How many acres of minerals? Now, with those minerals that we're able to see, how many minerals are able to be developed? What limitations are there on those lands? What areas should not be developed with surface impacts? What areas should be only developed underneath, again, through the horizontal drilling? And then what areas may be off limits entirely?
Hypothetically, under that I-70, that may not be appropriate because of structural issues.
I would not put a drilling rig on I-70, no.
Okay.
No,
but underneath it, I mean.
Yes.
I mean, just...
Well, no, because again, when you're developing those resources, you know, that mineral is about 9,000 feet underneath the ground. It's 6 to 9, depending on where you're at in the state. So again, for structural issues, you're not going to run into any issues whatsoever. They would never know that the minerals are being developed underneath.
Uh-huh.
So again, even with, you know, state parks, you know, you're developing underneath those lands. You know, the people who are enjoying those state parks, and again, I'm from eastern Ohio. I grew up 5 miles away from Salt Fork. You know, if you were hiking in the park or boating, you would not know that those minerals were being developed unless you saw the drilling rig or the production area, you know, a couple miles down the road.
Well, Becky Clutter, those drilling rigs and stuff, that can be unsightly, and it can be noisy, and it can create problems on the roads and that kind of a thing.
On the private parcels?
Well, on private parcels, yeah. But if you have a private parcel adjacent to, so let's say, a state park, which is a lot of people's concerns, who wants to be in a state park watching, even if it's adjacent and on completely private property, watching one of those rigs operate?
And that activity is very temporary, just during the time period that they're actually doing the construction work. That goes away.
Okay. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about efforts in the Ohio General Assembly to get going with a commission that would be approving leases and fracking, drilling on state property, state parks, underneath highways, underneath any kind of state-owned land. It could be a lot of different things. My guest by phone is Becky Clutter. She's with the Landowners for Energy Access and Safe Exploration in Ohio. Also with me, Columbus Dispatch Energy reporter Dan Guarino, and Sean Bennett, Executive Vice President for the Ohio Oil and Gas Association. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Dan Guarino, there was a protest or there was a demonstration in downtown Columbus recently by environmental groups opposed to fracking on state lands or any kind of drilling, and supportive of the effort to keep the commission unfunded or unstaffed. What about that? How are they? Do they really play much of a role in this? We're going to hear from them in a minute. But
in terms of the actual political debate that's taking place, I don't think that's affecting the dynamics between the governor and the legislature. But
the governor's not doing this because of environmental concerns.
If it's a factor, it's not the main factor for sure. But when you get into local communities, this is very much affecting the local dynamics at the kind of county board level, at the city, town, township level. There are certain parts of the state where this issue plays completely differently than it does in other parts of the state. And the groups that are behind protests like that are you'll find that they're in Athens County, for example. But if you go to far eastern or far Ohio, you're not going to see as much protest activity.
Becky Clutter, how big is your group, Landowners for Energy Access and Safe Exploration? I mean, how many people are we talking about who are affected by these issues in Ohio?
The folks in that group, I think, number about 300. NARO, obviously, is a much larger organization.
The National Association, right.
Correct. I don't really know the actual numbers of those people affected around the state lands, but we're talking Salt Fork and Egypt Valley and Bart Camp, and the ODOT lands are a big portion of this.
Mm-hmm. And what about the makeup of the commission, Dan Guarino? What would it be made up of if there ever were appointments?
So the 2011 statute, which I believe would still be in effect, says that the chief would be the commission would include the chief of the Division of Geological Survey from the DNR, two members from a list recommended by a state organization representing the oil and gas industry. I wonder if Sean might know who that organization may be, and one member of the public with expertise in finance or real estate, and one member representing an environmental or conservation organization.
It seems like it's tilted, Sean Bennett, in favor of oil and gas.
I would say it's tilted in favor of expertise. Again, you know, those who understand the oil and gas industry the best are the ones who work in it. And again, you know, this debate took place in 2011. I think we all recognize the benefits of developing our oil and gas resources. Now, the way that if you want to develop those resources, you want it to be done safe and responsibly, is you have to have the experts there, those who understand the different formations that we're going to develop, as well as the different safety or protocols need to be in place to maximize environmental stewardship. So again, those people would be there and have a unique position to understand that the best, and that's the oil and gas industry. The Ohio Environmental Council was at the table in 2011 for this, and that is one of the reasons why, again, there is an environmental group on the commission as well as why there is no development on nature preserves. So again, you know, some of these cries that are coming out about how it's being fast-tracked are a little bit disingenuous, in my opinion, for the pure fact that they were at the table and they were there the entire process. And now it's 6 years later, and that kind of opinion has changed drastically.
Brad in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Brad.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I just wanted to go back to what one of your guests was speaking about earlier. They said that there wouldn't be any noise at all associated with drilling. And I would just absolutely disagree with that. I mean, you have the construction, yes, but you also have ongoing drilling operations. And I understand the financial gain from going into drilling, but people go to state parks, particularly state parks, to relax, to get away from all that. And if you have heavy industry, you have the trucks that are coming and going to those drills. That creates a problem for me.
Mm. Becky Clutter, do you want to respond to that?
I have property in southern Ohio, and at the time that in the area where that was being developed, yes, we saw a lot of that during the construction phase, and you do have some traffic that comes by now, but it is far less than what it was during the initial construction phase. And I would like to point out too that the watershed districts are under a different structure, and therefore they are able to lease their properties.
Mm-hmm.
And they have seen tremendous benefits that go back to those watershed districts and those private individuals that have property surrounding those areas have been able to produce their minerals.
Okay, Brad, thanks a lot for that call. Dan Guarino, I mean, any thoughts about do we know about any mishaps around the state where this has been a bad idea, where there's things have gone wrong?
Well, in terms of public lands,
yeah.
Or in terms of not any kind of high-profile incident that mm-hmm. I can think of. It's because there just isn't that much of this activity. We've just only recently seen the process begin for the Wayne National Forest. And now there's this process that's been kind of stalled. So it would
it would be something that would be, you know, in the future, maybe years in the future before we would really know.
Becky Clutter, I want to thank you for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Becky Clutter is founder of the Landowners for Energy Access and Safe Exploration and board member of the National Association of Royalty Owners Appalachia Chapter. And also Sean Bennett, executive vice president for the Oil and Gas Association. Thanks for joining us again. I always appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
All right. We're going to continue our conversation. We're going to hear from the Ohio Environmental Council about what they think about all of this. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. House Republicans moved a step closer to getting fracking on state-owned land, including state parks. Last week, the House voted to override several line-item vetoes of the state budget by Governor Kasich. A lot of attention was paid to the Medicaid-related vetoes, but one override restored a provision that would shift power to appoint the Ohio Oil and Gas Commission. The commission was created 6 years ago when the Ohio General Assembly also approved drilling on state lands, but the governor has never appointed any members, which has amounted to a de facto moratorium on fracking on state lands. The Senate still has to approve that veto override. Still with us is Columbus Dispatch Energy reporter Dan Guarino. Dan, thanks again. Mm-hmm. And joining us now is Executive Director for the Ohio Environmental Council, Heather Taylor Measley. Welcome back.
Hi there.
Heather, before we get started on this particular topic, I did want to ask you about what's going on in the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. We spoke about it earlier in the program. Jim McCormick, retired naturalist with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, wrote on his Facebook page yesterday that the Ohio Division of Wildlife Chief was fired last week, that both assistant chiefs were fired. He speculated that at least four other top administrators or more were likely to follow. He called it a hostile political takeover by the political appointees who currently run the ODNR. He said that this is by far the worst political gamesmanship he has seen in 30 plus years of involvement with state government and that the public, he said, is a big loser. I'm sorry. It used to be that they left management of natural resources to the professionals, he wrote. What do you make of what's going on at the Ohio Department of Natural Resources?
I think that there's a lot of questions that are coming up, right? There's been a lot of demotions. There's been a lot of people moved out. These are really respected professionals,
right,
that have worked for both sides of the aisle and have kind of been above politics. So there's no question that this is out of the norm. And I think it raises a lot of questions as to why does ODNR want to basically eliminate the leadership and the long respected leadership of an entire division.
At this point in time, I mean, we're about 17 months out.
Right.
It's not like it's the beginning of an administration. We're at the end of an administration.
Right. You really have to ask yourself what's going on. And I think
any
that
answers
that's,
yet?
I don't think that we have any answers. We're certainly making a lot of calls and really trying to nail down exactly what's going on, how alarmed we should be. Is this about fracking? Is this about retribution? Is this a simple staff change? You know, there are a lot of different questions, and I think that they deserve answers.
Does it affect much at this point? I mean, in a day-to-day, will Ohioans, do you think, notice anything?
I think that the institutional knowledge that that's currently being eliminated from ODNR is certainly of concern. You know, these are guys who've been around for a really long time, doing really good work for a lot of different administrations, making sure that Ohioans have a place to hunt and to fish and our environment is cared for. And we need to get to the bottom of it. So I don't know what the actual day-to-day cost will be, but certainly for the long-term health of the agency and for that division, it's concerning, and we should ask those questions.
So let's move to the Oil and Gas Commission now, or the lack thereof. There is no commission because the governor's never appointed anybody to it. The Ohio Environmental Council, as Sean Bennett said earlier, was in on the ground floor of all of this 6 years ago. It was supposed to be formed dammed within a matter of months and that nothing ever happened. What do you make of this?
Well, I think that all of it comes down to how should we be using our public lands? These are lands that you and I own as the taxpayers of Ohio, and what those lands should be used for. Right now, this is where our families congregate, where we go on our picnics, where we hike, where we fish, where we hunt. And those, the priorities of those areas should not be divided on or decided on partisanship. It needs to really be decided using the best science and really a thought. And at this point, what we have is an attempt to do a real power grab from the state legislature. And what we all know is the state legislature is very gerrymandered. These are essentially members of the state legislature who pick their constituents instead of their constituents picking them because they are in safe districts. And so we need somebody who's in charge, who's actually responsible to all the people of Ohio.
I've asked a lot of questions today, though, that can't be answered until there is something like an oil and gas commission that actually crunches the numbers, figures out what are we talking about in terms of foregone revenues? What are we talking about in terms of the amount of state land that would be affected by this? It's not just state parks, as Sean Bennett clearly pointed out. It's a lot of other things, too.
There's no reason that those numbers can't be crunched. The Ohio Department of Natural Resources certainly could crunch those numbers. The legislature could certainly crunch those numbers if they wanted them. We don't need a commission to do that. This commission, especially if the appointment were made by, you know, very, very partisan majorities that are happening in the state legislature right now, that's not necessary. That just makes this a much more politicized event. If we're just looking for facts, well, we have public agencies that certainly can go find those facts.
Jean Carino?
I would agree with this idea that if we really wanted to have a better handle on how much potential money we're talking about here, and also specifically what lands, you know, if we wanted a master list, here are all the lists, that the lands that may be affected. Here are the lands in your county. Here are the lands near your house. This is kind of how we can wrap our arms around this whole thing. That could be done. There's DNR could do it, I would think.
They could, but if you haven't called for something like that, they're probably not going to do it.
Well, they're not going to just do it because they just decided to. But you could have one of the state universities do it. You could have – I mean, there are any number of – but that's a substantial task, though. Even the idea that this commission would do something like that. I mean, when you look at the makeup of the commission, this idea that there would be some sort of big research endeavor, I almost wonder if that's really what – I mean, I think it would be more along the lines of specific proposals and accepting specific proposals as opposed to getting some sort of inventory of what
In other words, that's not necessarily part of its mission.
Yeah, I don't expect – if this commission were to exist and looking at the language, the language when it was set up in 2011, I wouldn't expect this some sort of master report 8 months later saying here's what we're talking about. It would be – I think that would be a matter for the commission to decide if that's what they wanted to do. And if I'm so a lot of the questions that we have could be answered. It's just nobody is answering them.
Even the industry is not answering them. You know, if they really care this much, go get some research done by a credible source. We would certainly be happy to talk to them about the kind of credible sources out there that could do this kind of stuff. If this is really that big of a deal, go find the facts and make your case. But right now, they haven't made the case. And in fact, I would say that we need to have those questions answered even before this commission is established. I mean, in many ways, don't we want to make sure that we understand what we're talking about before we try to start leasing off public lands?
Well, 6 years ago when the law was enacted in the first place, wasn't there some discussion about what we were talking about, what they were talking about at the time?
You know, that was certainly before my time. I'm not sure about
Dan
yours,
Carino?
Dan.
Well, in 2011, it's funny. This was not a huge deal when it happened in 2011, and there was language put in there. I'm overusing the word language today, because we're talking about legislation, but to protect environmentally sensitive areas, to protect nature preserves and things like that.
Yeah.
So it says right in there, this commission cannot consider development in nature preserves. So there are some things kind of baked into it that reflect
and attempt to deal with some of this stuff. But the, I guess the bigger issue is that a lot of these questions were not answered then and would presumably be answered once this commission was in place and had people who were actually meeting and reviewing specific plans.
The environmentally sensitive areas are not affected. Nature preserves are not affected. Heather Taylor Measley, what is the Ohio Environmental Council's concern about all of this?
I think that our concern is that there's been this huge just groundswell of oil and gas drilling. And there, the conversation about the environment always kind of gets put off into the back seat, right? You know, there's this talk of jobs and this these talks.
Well, there are real jobs.
Absolutely, there are real jobs. But there's also real jobs that come from tourism. And there's real jobs in those restaurants whenever a family goes to hike on the weekends that, you know, they that are employing people there, too. There are a lot of really great reasons to keep these places natural, especially in a place like Ohio that doesn't have, you know, it's not the same as Yosemite. We have some very, very special places in our state, but they're becoming fewer and farther between because we're not actually looking at all the facts. You know, if we're going to do a study on all the economic benefits of oil and gas, then let's also do a study on all the economic benefits of keeping those places whole and places where our families can recreate, because that also you see in study after study of independent sources that measures up. It's a big deal, and so let's get a hold on all of it. Right now, what we're saying is that we need to have that conversation. Let's not just put this into a partisan process that will yield results for one side or the other. Let's actually have a conversation about all of the benefits and all of the drawbacks for our citizens.
Right, but is a de facto moratorium such as this, where the commission's not being appointed, where nothing's getting done, is that a good way?
Well, I think that you can also have a conversation. We've been around for a long time, and we've always been happy to sit down. And I think that everybody involved, at least that has been opposing the appointment of these commissioners, has always been willing to sit down and have a conversation, even if we oppose it for different reasons. And so if they want to have a conversation about how you get through this, then sure, let's have that conversation.
The reason why Governor Kasich vetoed the change of the power shift, the reason why he says he wants to keep it in the administration, has nothing to do with protecting the environment. Mm-hmm. It has everything to do with controlling what decisions are made. And apparently, according to his veto language, maintaining some kind of status quo and some kind of consistency in who oversees the lands. It doesn't seem like the Kasich administration is on the same page as you when it comes to, you know, being supportive of this, you know, this holdup because of the environment. Does that matter?
I think that no. At the end of the day, as long as it doesn't happen, it doesn't matter to us. But I do think on this point, Kasich's intent is right. You know, right now, the health of our public lands are tasked with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. It's tasked with the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency. And so, therefore, we do want some consistency, right? You know, having the legislature fight with the people who are intended and, frankly, qualified to actually make decisions doesn't make a lot of sense. Let's have some consistency. And frankly, consistency is not just good for the environment. Consistency is good for business, too.
What are your expectations about what's going to happen in the Senate? What do you hear?
I think at this point we're getting mixed signals all the way around. We know that we have some really great champions on both sides of the aisle who think that we need more conversation on whether a commission is the right fit for this. And I know that the other side has some real champions, too. And so we both continue to fight. Hopefully we'll eventually get around to a conversation. I know that we're very willing to have that conversation. And then we can move forward. You know, the Ohio Environmental Council, we're not anti-pipeline. We haven't been anti-fracking or any of those types of things. What we have been is trying to have a deliberate conversation about the communities and the environment that stand in the gap here. And that's really been what our focus has been. Even if we don't like these practices, we think that while they're happening, we have to confront what's in front of us, and that's what we're trying to do.
Heather Taylor Measley, thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime.
Heather Taylor Measley is the Executive Director of the Ohio Environmental Council, and Dan Guarino, Energy Reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks for joining us as well.
Good to be here.
That's it. We'll keep our eye on this one. Hope you do too. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.